This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Idea what this is, canine?
Dangerous, addictive.
Bad stuff.
It's the worst. I've seen whole planets ravaged by it.
This is your brain. This is your brain on.
Pull to open.
Any questions?
Yes, and what do?
It's just an electric zoo.
Who knows what forces exist in an unstable zone such as that?
It doesn't just take recordings.
Are you claiming superior knowledge?
I'm just having fun.
Yes, that could be the answer.
I just wish you'd get on with it. I got a schedule.
Right, now hold on very tight.
Here come the drums!
Hello and welcome to Pull to Open, an ongoing quest to watch all of Doctor Who, the entire television program, every single story in random order. I'm Pete Paschal.
And I'm Chris Taylor, coming to you live this week from the surface of the planet Eden, where I've gone for an on-the-scene report. We'll be snorting some Vraxoxin later. But in the meantime, let's explain how we got here to Eden. Folks, do you want to, Pete, do you want to catch the folks up on where we've been previously?
Sure thing. Although little does Chris know, he might actually be in a laser crystal recording of Eden. We're not sure.
Wait,
we're investigating that. But previously on Pull to Open. So we've been bouncing around the Pertwee era for a bit. So a little while back, about three stories ago or four, depending on when you're listening to this, we did Day of the Daleks for a nice little timey-wimey adventure where timelines are created and obliterated with lots of CGI, or maybe there wasn't. I don't know. It's all kind of mishmash because timelines are colliding. The canon itself is colliding. We have no idea.
For sure.
We got out
wow,
of there
that
real
was foreshadowing.
Quick. At the advice of David Tennant, we got out of there. We went to one of his stories, which was the epic two-parter Human Nature and the Family of Blood, which has only risen in reputation since the broadcast so many years ago. We had a great time with Stephen Schepansky from Radio Free Skaro on that episode. It's already our highest viewed episode on YouTube. It was epic. It was a great time. Go check it out if you haven't already.
Another piece of foreshadowing there with a David Tennant's Doctor not really knowing who he is.
Right.
Interesting.
Wow. Timelines colliding and repeating, it seems. But we had to get out of there. We couldn't live forever in Human Nature, whether we were in the mirror or not. And we jumped ahead. Did we jump ahead? No, we didn't. We sort of jumped ahead. We jumped to a comic book timeline to talk a bit about the Star Beast.
We jammed the controls that ran up to go there and talk about the glory of Dave Gibbons' original comic.
On the proper podcast, because we've been doing a lot of that. Well, okay. Well, first of all, I should say we also did the Star Beast hot take, which timelines are really colliding here, guys, because it's like when we're recording this podcast, we haven't done that yet, but you've probably heard our take on the Star Beast, the TV episode already. In addition to our last proper podcast, done the Three Doctors. And sorry for no dramatic preamble to that one. We also did the Three Doctors, but it was really apt that we did the 10th anniversary special on the date of the 60th anniversary special, which is super duper awesome. And
so wild, so good, so weird. That was the first story that I recorded here in Costa Rica. Spoiler alert, it's not actually planet Eden. And knowing that it was in a lush green setting, the randomizer then took us forward again from the Three Doctors to season 17, serial 4, the much troubled, very nightmarish Nightmare of Eden.
Boom.
Yes. Boom.
Dude, do you ever watch Red Dwarf?
Do I ever? Yes, I do.
So I realize now we should have just done what they did at the beginning of season 6, I think, of that show, where Crichton, where Lister goes into this long explanation of what happened since the end of the last season, and Crichton's like, dude, that was convoluted, ridiculous, and more boring than an in-flight magazine on Air Belgium. Just tell them what we're doing. And that's, we should have just cut to here. It's like, forget where we were. Here's where we are. We're doing Nightmare
of Eden. That's right. We are in the Nightmare of Eden. We're in Douglas Adams' era. We are here at the last Bob Barker special. Very special episode. Bob Barker does drugs. Doctor Who does drugs. It's an astonishing... Bob Baker.
Why host of Price is Right?
Yes, that's why. That's why. Oh my goodness. It's too many Bakers in Doctor Who, so I'm randomly assigning extra consonants to some of the Bakers. Sorry, Bob. Bob Baker was very successful with the Wallace and Gromit series. Bob Barker ended his career here. The timelines diverged.
Wouldn't blame you for being big fans of both. But guys, if you want to cut right to our commentary of Nightmare in Eden, and I have no idea why you wouldn't want to do that, you can just check the show notes for the exact time our commentary on that story begins. We always begin, of course, with TLDW. So you can cut right to that. But of course, you do not want to do that, of course, because we don't just have an all-new Himoji Challenge. Yes, it was on hold for a week, but it's back. We got the Himoji Challenge. We have poll to open with results on what everybody thought of Human Nature and the Family of Blood and lots more. It is all coming up in the poll to open Pulse Loop.
Of course, fetch it, David.
That's right. I'm going to start with the brand new thing that we've got on this weird platform called the World Wide Web. We're at pulltoopen.net. There, yes, we actually have a website. We have a newsletter. We have a Patreon where you can support the podcast, patreon.com/pulltoopen. Subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get our full written episodes. I also think that we should maybe have the subscribers and our patrons involved in the voting process next time we do a Hot 100. Go check out our episode on that. And Pink, we've got some more special commentaries. We recorded one in their past, which is our future. I always get those two mixed up. But what else we got coming?
Well, we got one coming up tonight, which should be Wild Blue Yonder when this is posting. So look out for that.
Yeah, my God. Can you believe when that thing happened in Starbeast that we totally didn't expect?
Yeah, man. That was all the Starbeastness. Oh, my God. And when
so Starbeast.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. But Beep was a villain. My God. Wow.
Insane.
How could you?
But... we'll get one more next week, of course, after whatever the next episode is. But we'll also do a hot take on the giggle.
We will indeed. And you, while you're waiting for the giggle and for the Wild Blue Yonder, one of the best ways to show your support for the show is leave a review in the podcast app you're using, especially if it's Apple Podcasts. Please, please review responsibly. 5-star reviews are excellent, but whatever, how many stars you want to dock for all of this rubbish we talk at the start of the podcast, it will still make the show more visible to listeners. Eager great discussions of Doctor Who. Best way to show your appreciation, not just to leave your review, leave it in the form of a Whomoji, a story title of Doctor Who that we can then use to torture me in a later episode. Or, the other thing you could do is share it with a friend. Share the podcast with a friend. Just dip randomly into your address book, send this particular show right now, and maybe they can jump in at this point, which is where we get the Whomoji Challenge.
They can follow along. Exactly. They can play the guessing game on their own and maybe help you out. Yep, because it is time, as you said, for the Himoji Challenge. And we have some new Himojis. And guys, oh, you're going to love it just as I do, because we get to twist the knife here on Chris's Himoji knowledge now that we're... I'm getting a little too graphic with the violence on this one.
Yeah.
But this is going to be a tough one, I think.
Now I'm thinking about which stories have twisted knives in them. Anyway.
Of course, all of these are user, reader, viewer submitted. And this one comes at us from Jack Hustwaite on Twitter, who gave us an easy, medium, hard. And you remember the last one might have been a little bit easy. That was the Web Planet. Well, we're going right to medium. And this is going to be a tough one, I think. Lots to choose from. So,
okay.
Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready.
All right. We have three emojis. First emoji, downward arrow.
Okay.
Second emoji, water droplet.
Okay.
Third emoji, devil. Grinning devil.
Oh, so gosh.
Down arrow, water droplet, grinning devil. Drop that
is
in
it,
chat.
Is it the impossible planet?
It is not
or the
impossible
Satan
planet.
Satan pit? No. All right, just wanted to get those out of the way. Downward arrow, water droplet. Right. Is it Inferno?
It I'm is thinking, not Inferno.
Oh boy!
Let me know if you need some hints.
Yeah, I might need the most important hint of all. Is it old or new Who?
It is old Who. And I would say quite old Who.
Oh, my goodness. That was probably going to make it much more difficult in my eyes. God, what could this be? The water droplet. Not a whole ocean, so we're not talking about the weed. We're not talking about the wriggly things in the weed. Fury from the Deep.
We're not.
Ooh, okay, so it's Troughton. Gosh, water droplets, devil face. The underwater menace.
It's the underwater menace. You got it. You just needed like a hint or two. That was a tough one, right? And that's only medium.
Oh my goodness. Underwater. I love it. I love it. Yeah. Thank you, Jack.
The next hint was going to be, because I was thrown off by that too. I was thrown off by the devil because I was a little like you were, I think, a little too literal.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking when I first got it, and I was DMing with Jack, is this the Sea Devils? It is not. So as
I
long as
they're
not too literal with any of them, I think it was all right. So thanks so much, Jack, for that.
Yeah, thank you. Great cryptic crossword skills. Mm. Yes, love it.
You too can be a Himuji Challenge person and get shouted out on the podcast and be forever recorded in our codex, because every one of these emojis goes into our codex. Link also in the show notes. And you will be immortalized forever as the person who named that Doctor Who episode in the form of an emoji.
Indeed. And another way to immortalize yourself is if you're on Spotify, you can poll to open. That's right. Poll from the bottom of the screen. There'll be a little poll asking you what you think of Nightmare on Eden, in Eden, of Eden. You know what?
Nightmare against Eden.
I could not remember every single time I was researching this. A nightmare of, nightmare in. Anyway, you can vote on that, but you can also vote on every other show where we have a poll on Spotify. And stay in line if you're in line, because those polls stay open for many, many thousands of years. After we record it, so you can change the outcome on every single one of our polls. Just go to the episode page in the app and vote there. And we got some results from Human Nature / The Family of Blood, and spoiler alert, I think people like this one.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You betcha. Wow, an outpouring of banger support. This is a Viscount banger. It is not unanimous, but it is overwhelmingly the majority at close to 70% of the votes. And most of the rest went to Dalek, which is a good episode of Doctor Who. So very, very well regarded.
Indeed, and to be expected, yeah, really, just because it did do so well in the Doctor Who magazine poll. It's the new number 7 best story of all time, according to the readers of the magazine. So, Yeah, yeah. If a seventh best gets 70% in our poll, that seems like we're about on track.
Yeah, like I was saying, it's definitely risen in reputation over time. And a little bit of the people voting made it a fixed point in time, which I don't fully understand. But I'm glad there were no Professor Haters or Ogrons or Lady Cassandras, because come on, that's just silliness. This is not at all weak Doctor Who in any way.
Having read the book, I could see people could be like, you know, I love the book for so many years. I just can't get with the show, but I understand. That would be a good fixed point in time reason.
Makes sense. Folks, if you are a follower of the podcast on a podcast app, there is another place you can follow it, which is YouTube. And that is youtube.com/pull2open. Even if you're already listening, it's a great place to show some support. And get our sort of join our followers there, because there is a lot of great discussion on YouTube, and it's another place you can leave an emoji title or a comment and also see all the things we got here. And we got a little fourth Doctor action there in the background and other Easter eggs. Of course, if you are watching on YouTube,
random countries pop up next. Yes, remember to like and subscribe. Hit the bell.
There it
icon.
Is. We got to get that in. Got to do the like and subscribe.
Yeah, we're growing fast on YouTube. We've got over 1,000 followers there now. We've got more than 11,000 followers on TikTok, where we're pulled to open. You can listen to the whole podcast on TikTok. That's right. Stop scrolling. Stop going to your For You page. Just listen to the whole damn podcast, TikTok kids. It's an hour and a half. What are you going to do? Just chill out, listen to us, keep on commenting there, and all the rest, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Threads, Pull to Open 63, and Blue Sky, Pull to Open. Now, there's a lot to talk about, a lot we might normally want to talk about here on the Pulse Loop. However, we're so disconnected in time from when it's happening, and you know so much more than us, dear Lizza, about the anniversary specials and the new direction that the show appears to be going in. We won't trouble you.
And the color episode of the Daleks, that's all in the past too now. Indeed. My God, I'm so jealous of you future people. You've seen so much Doctor Who and stuff. We'll catch up.
I can't believe they did that to the Daleks. But yes, it is time. It's time to stop procrastinating, because it's time once again to torture me, I believe. Is that correct, Pete?
Always. Yep. It's always the Chris Taylor Torture Fest here in Pull to Open, because it's time to begin our commentary, as we always do, with a little segment we like to call TLDW, Too Long Didn't Watch, Too Long Doctor Who, where one of us summarizes the entire plot of the story we're talking about in record time. And today, that is you, sir, Mr. Chris Taylor. Are you ready to tell us all about what happened in Nightmare of Eden? Because I kind of want to know.
Not at all, which is why I'm going to pause for a PSA. We do have a PSA this week. We don't have an ad read. But I just wanted to say, and this is a special PSA to all the kids out there, this is your brain. And this is your brain on Brax Oxen. Any questions? All right. I think that aptly summarizes Nightmare of Eden.
I thought we were going to do a little poaching recipe next year.
That's what I should have done.
I always wanted to know how to poach an egg.
That's what I should have done. I mean, Brax Oxen, it's kind of a slower burn. You just kind of feel like you're dribbling out of an egg. Okay, no, I'm ready. Let's do it.
Well, they all have questions. That's the thing. They have questions of what happened in Nightmare of Eden, and we're going to summarize that in 2 minutes, because we allot 30 seconds for every Classic Who episode, and this one has 4. So we are about to do it. You ready?
Ready. Let's do it.
Rock on. Here comes the official pull to open summary of Nightmare of Eden in 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so there's a tourist ship, a cruise ship, and it's going through space, and the navigator doesn't seem to be that concerned about stuff. It's like he's on drugs or something. But what's this? They've collided with another ship in the same hyperspace path, and the doctor lands on board, and he and Romana start to investigate, because the doctor's all about interfering now, and he wants to discover why the two ships are joined in this weird sort of hyperspacey way, and there seems to be a layer between them that's blocking some of the corridors. And he goes in, and the owner of the ships are arguing with each other about insurance. The navigator is like clearly on drugs because the doctor follows him and sees that he's been taking something called Frextoxin, which is devastating. It could destroy whole communities. And the doctor and Romana also discover that there's a scientist on board the ship, Dr. Trist, who is he has this sort of Carnival of Monsters type thing where it's like a miniscope, but like projects a live version of all these planets that he's visiting, trying to save all of the stuff in there. But they little do they know that Dr. Trist is actually smuggling drugs. He's agreed to help smuggle some drugs specifically in Eden. And the stuff is mandrels are breaking out. Mandrels are actually the source of Frextoxin. They turn into this powder when they die, and they're breaking out onto the ship. But the Doctor and Romana dislocate the ship. After having gone into Eden to figure this out, and found out the guy who was in there, who's on Dr. Trist's survey team, isn't actually dead. He's a NARC agent, and he's been trying to trace this this Frextoxin ring. And so they figured it all out. There's cops come up. The head of the cruise ship dies of Frextoxin. Basically, it takes him in its claw, and then everything's sorted out, and the Doctor and Romana leave after Dr. Trist is arrested. Well, yeah, thank you. I may have gotten things slightly out of order there, but I'm going to say that was the results of the Frextoxin.
Yeah, I think you got a pretty good round table of the multiple ways to pronounce Frextoxin.
Frextoxin. Oh, God.
That's okay.
That's right, because heroin, Frextoxin. So I will say I was a little confused by the name of the drug throughout, which they also refer to as Vrax, and K9 refers to as one point as XYP. Now this is the legacy of the original version of the script, in which Vrax was given a different title, which was Zip, which is much more pronounceable. And yes, I wouldn't have recorded just an entire PSA with the wrong name for the drug. I would have said, yes, this is your brain on Zip. It's much easier. But who got in the way of that? That's right. That narc, Lala Ward, who said that she thought that Zip would sound too appealing to kids. Thanks, Lala.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, the kids. I mean, it's all for the kids, isn't it?
It's for kids.
Yeah, I mean, Vrax. I mean, the thing is, Vraxo and Vrax, I think it would have been. It's kind of like you want to do something realistic in that most drugs get some kind of catchy nickname. But I also see the sort of utility of simply abbreviating the drug you're talking about, so that it's clear to viewers, because honestly this one has so many similar names, particularly with the characters going around, like I had to keep reminding myself, like, who's Trist and who's Fisk, and
there is one point at which the character named Fisk says to the character named Trist, so calls him Fisk, like, and it's still there in the in the edition of the show. Like it's confusing.
That's a good sort of signal to sort of take a step back and sort of talk a little bit about the production of this episode, which was notorious even for the time. So apparently, you know, certainly Tom Baker had a reputation. He was sometimes fairly difficult, worked well with some people, didn't work well with others. And so a regular shoot for Doctor Who, I think, during this time, particularly sort of this is the waning years of Baker, was probably not the the greatest experience in the first place, right? Or not the smoothest, greatest, you could argue, just because there is a lot of genius work going on. You think about working alongside people like Tom Baker and Douglas Adams, and the creative forces leveled at the show at this time. Obviously, there's a lot to be said for that. But that said, even among sort of the chaos of this era, like this one was particularly chaotic. And I think a lot of it had to do with the director, as I understand it.
Yes, the director was a guy of the old school, and he and Baker butted heads, Tom Baker, that is, constantly on the set, and the director eventually walks off. But the shoot in general was so difficult, and it was so far away from what Bob Baker, sorry, Bob, sorry for the Barker thing, imagined, that Douglas Adams himself said that he was going to quit after this. It was known as the Nightmare of Television Center. They had T-shirts printed, the crew did, saying Nightmare of Television Center when this was done. And Graham Williams, who was the producer of the show, also said after this, like, that's it. I'm dud. I'm done. I'm quitting. So, two of the finest minds to have produced Doctor Who. You know, people argue about Williams, but you definitely can't argue about Douglas Adams. And they were pulled off it by just how bad the shoot, at least, of Nightmare of Eden was, and how far away from the original, very serious bunch of ideas this sort of unintentionally comic version was.
Yeah, and the thing is, I think it's a fine idea for a story. I think there's a lot of interesting things here, and some of them very kind of Douglas Adams-esque. I mean, you think about just the sort of innovation, the story innovation of the laser recorder thingy. I can't remember. There's like an abbreviation for the device where they sort of store these entire environments inside. It's almost like a miniscope, but it's not. Mm. So like in the miniscope in Carnival of Monsters, those are, they explicitly say they're miniaturized version of these habitats, and they sort of mentally adjust the people in them so that they keep going round and round in the same events. Whereas this is like, it's a different sort of technology, but the same idea. And you sort of have these recordings. It's more like kind of a holodeck, I'd say, for, you know, like in the, if you're familiar with the Star Trek stories that use it, it's a little like that, but it is also like, you can go into this virtual world. Maybe the holodeck isn't quite right. It's the effect. It's like Tron.
Yes.
Like when you get scanned in and now you're in this sort of virtual environment, except the virtual environment looks exactly like the real world.
It's holodeck-ish. It's holodeck-ish. Yeah. And yes, it has. I mean, you're hitting on something here that I think is important to say, that Nightmare of Eden had great potential and was ahead of its time. In a lot of ways. One is that sort of holodeckish kind of nature of this crystal that the planets are stored in, exactly like a cup of soup. So you could say it looks forward as well as back. Also, the ships colliding seems to be like the biggest idea. We haven't seen, but this idea of ships colliding in hyperspace, that's a really neat idea. So he's trying to do that as well. He's kind of really trying to do too many things. And then at the same time, he wants this to be The Wire in space, years before we actually had The Wire. But that's basically what it is, right? You know, we've got drug cops who
are bent. Fewer years before Miami Vice. And we've already had like the French Connection, and this is the 70s. So of course, just drug culture and drug, not to culture, but the idea of cops and robbers with the consequence being whole communities ruined by drugs if they get it wrong.
Yeah.
That was definitely sort of a narrative at the time. And that's, honestly, some of the best scenes and the best moments in this story, I would argue, are really sort of turning the lens on that. And even though it's exaggerated, like the effects of Fraxoan are almost a little too cartoony at times. And certainly the mandrels themselves are a little bit cartoony. I don't think the execution gives the weight of the drama and gives the seriousness to it that it really deserves. But
for sure,
credit for the ideas and trying to go for kind of a mature storyline here.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, we'll talk about the mandrels in a minute. They're sort of famous as a Doctor Who monster that didn't live up to expectations.
Perhaps.
Certainly not the scariest monster ever, as the Sun newspaper had it, because there were no publicity photos. Oh my God, it must be terrifying. But let's talk about the drugs. Let's zero in on the drugs, because it's so front and center in this. Let's talk about the drugs, man. Because Fraxoan, I mean, first of all, It's very pre-war on drugs. Yes, it is the 70s and things are getting gritty. But Bob Baker's just done this series called Target. which was, you know, kind of the British TV equivalent of, like, a, you know, I guess a Miami Vice, or, you know, a, you know, dark, gritty, drug-based drama, right? And he just, say, just done some research on this. But it's very war on drugs. It's very talking about the drugs in general, right, as being a thing. And not really thinking about the kind of thing that we think about now in relation to drugs, which is, like, you know, alcohol is one of them, right? And that was definitely not a thing in the 70s. And to sort of have Tom Baker, who, love you, Tom, but, you know, kind of famously a little bit drunk for a lot of Doctor Who recording, does like his beer and does like his wine. We've seen this on screen, you know. So to have him be the message bearer of, like, get out, you sell drugs to kids, that all sort of, you know, the gravitas that he tries to bring to it, it's not perhaps the ideal thing here. And also, yeah, that we, I guess we just hadn't seen enough of the actual effects of how this could work, because, yeah. So let's talk about the effects. So first of all,
I pushed back on the Baker thing just because I don't think it's like his reputation with hardcore fans and sort of people looking in hindsight might be quite different from kids and folks who are casual viewers, certainly at the time. Right. So he's a bonkers doctor, but no, I don't think he was a well-known sort of drunkard. Certainly maybe if you were really gossipy in gossipy circles, sure. So yeah, I don't mind him having that kind of came out. Yeah. But I would say, like, you kind of need to place yourself in time and space too, on sort of this more simplistic messages about drugs and drug use. And I think the main message, less about the effect on individuals, even though that's here, is more about that it's ruining whole communities and, in this case, sort of whole planets. And that is definitely, that rings very true.
It's just unfortunate that, you know, we know what resulted in the war on drugs. We know about the millions who were incarcerated for selling, you know, tiny amounts of weed, for example, still incarcerated for it. You know, all a consequence of the sort of the moral panic over drugs, all of drugs, lumping them all together.
We've also seen recently, like, the problems with the taking a reversal stance where you get sort of these open air drug markets in various cities. And, you know, there's definitely issues with being too permissive as well, right? So I think, I don't have the right answer. If I did, I'd probably work in that field. But it is like, at the time, it was, you know, like, something needs to be done, and sort of turning to authority figures was kind of the thing you did. I think you could definitely, there's potential to tell a more sophisticated story with a little more of showing both sides. I don't think you necessarily have to both sides it per se from a moral level, but I think, yeah, to your point of, like, the resolution's a little too simplistic. Yeah.
And there's too much going on, right? To really focus, give the drug the focus that it needs. And a lot of, reviews of Nightmare of Eden have pointed out, like, well, hang on. What we're told about Vrax is that you get hyper addicted to it and then it kills you. Like, we're not told the mechanism by which it kills you. But, like, you'd have to be super, you're not going to take it recreationally. You'd have to be super desperate to be on it. You know, super desperate to kill your pain, which none of the people taking it we see are. I mean, they just sort of act a bit drunk, basically. We have Sekka, who's, I guess, is the navigator. And then we have Rig, who's the captain, who's accidentally given Vrax.
He's deliberately given it, but he doesn't choose to get it, right? He's basically sabotaged. And you think about, like, if what they say about this drug is true, like, that's just a horrific thing to do to somebody, like, get them sort of inadvertently addicted to this thing. And then either they die, or I don't know, I guess you could maybe make the case they go through some kind of horrific withdrawal. But I was reminded from that, I was actually reminded of Spider-Man 2099, which I think most people are only familiar with it from the latest Spider-Man movie, like Across the Spider-Verse. But that's actually how he becomes Spider-Man 2099. He is given this future drug that is actually remarkably similar to the Raxoan, sounds like, because only rich people take it because it gives this great high, but it's so expensive, and you can never get off it. That's sort of the price you pay. And so he doesn't want to be beholden to the company that makes this drug. So he actually modifies his own genetic code to do it. But then something goes wrong. He ends up modifying it with like Peter Parker's genes or something. And then he becomes Spider-Man. It's a great little story. I mean, I strongly recommend Spider-Man 2099. Like the idea of, to your point, any drug that you can't get off of, who in their, I mean, again, I would say in their right minds, and maybe you're probably not in your right mind if you're thinking it, so fair enough, but
But the doctor said he's seen whole planets fall victim to this, so you just need a little bit extra to sort of explain
and
the
logic. Also, Trist says everybody who took it had a choice, which is like, if you did have a choice, I don't know why you would ever choose to take this thing. It sounds like it's a death sentence.
Yeah, exactly. Especially as it's just all it's inducing is you just don't care about stuff, which you can get the same effect by just having a few beers, you know? that's the odd thing. It's like the only effect that we see is that they just kind of look drunk on the job. The captain's just like laughing about how his crew is, you know, his passengers are getting eaten, which, by the way, is a very sort of kind of meta moment of the captain looking at the mandrels on the screen eating his passengers. And just, you know, A, saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter that it's economy. but also kind of doing what we're doing with the mandrels at that point, which is laughing at them. you know, doing exactly what the viewers would have been doing. So let's talk about the monsters, right? Because this is the number one exhibit for why you would see this in Alien and Aliens and that whole series going forward. This is why you put your creature in the dark, people. This is why you put them in dark corridors, not light corridors. Because in the dark, the mandrels actually do look pretty scary. Because you see their glowing green eyes. You don't see that they're wearing flared trousers. You know, you don't see
how... They're kind of shambling about.
Yeah. And then in the corridors, they're giving it this. They've got like furry Muppet arms. They just kind of look cute, and
they look like a bunch of mascots. For the, you know what I mean? I feel like this is people backs in inside a sports stadium, sort of backstage, if you will. You know, guiding the mascots to their dance number on the field for whatever football team. That's what that felt like to me, you know?
I love it.
It just looks so goofy.
I love it. You could just retroactively write that in. By the way, there was a 2021 edition of this, I believe, for the Blu-ray that's upgraded a lot of the effects. But it does not upgrade the mandrels. But you could, like, if there was this new who, you could have an explanation like that, right? Of like either the crystal stored them at like a low res, so this is sort of the equivalent of them being pixelated. Or it's like these aren't actually mandrels, they're ersatz mandrels, they're high school mascots, they're something else. Just like the real creature is actually scarier, and you only see it in the scenes on Eden, which would be fine, because you don't get Nevrax on the ship when anyone kills mandrels there.
Right, weird. That's what I didn't really get. I think arguably they were just stunned, because there is a bit, which I think is intentional, where the doctor says, don't worry, that thing's totally dead. And Romana steps over it. And you can see it breathing.
When she could have walked around. She could have walked around so easily. And she has to do a jump over it. Oh, poor Lana Ward.
But it's funny, one of these sort of moments in Doctor Who where you actually literally see the thing breathing, even though she's walking over it. And the doctor just said it's dead. And you're kind of in your head, you think, it's Doctor Who. So I guess they were just... didn't care that it didn't match the dialogue, but no, that was apparently intentional. I mean, I'm just inferring that from what happens later, because then it recovers and then it dies and then it turns to Rax Owen. And I can't remember if any other mandrels actually get killed after that. I think they do.
They're not turning to Rax. So maybe they only do that when they're odd needing it. And it's a reaction with the atmosphere. That would make sense, I guess.
Well, but that thing, the one that broke down was in the ship. That was in the power
unit. Oh, it was? Okay.
Power unit.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. No, it doesn't quite work. But the mandrels, I mean, it's a problem. And it's funny, it's a coincidence that I ended up watching the movie Prometheus, which, if anyone remembers, is kind of an Alien prequel. On this sort of same weekend, I finished off Nightmare of Eden. And again, I wouldn't say that's the absolute best monster slash creature effects, but the idea of being able to do that idea of real fear and peril and these really alien things. And again, you don't have to go full on gross out in the way that sort of rated R sci-fi horror movies do. But the fact that the mandrels just sort of hug people to death, apparently, and there's nothing even really that implied. I mean, yes, they sort of kill passengers or whatever, but you don't really see much. Like, in other words, or rather, you do see a lot, and you see them, they're just kind of hugging people and they fall down. It would be better to at least like imply something more horrific, right? Has just happened. And whether even you can achieve that a lot with pans, right? Just pan up with some screaming. You know, Sam Raimi was perfect at this. And the reason I would sort of bring up Sam Raimi is like, well, this is sort of, I think, an indication of the director controversy being an even more serious problem. Now, not that Alan Bromley, if he had finished it off, I don't think it would have been Alien or Prometheus, but you can tell in the last couple of episodes, and apparently they did this more or less in sequence, that the director is really suffering there. Like, what passes for action is like there's pauses when K-9 comes in to shoot something. People just kind of stand there and wait for him to sort of shoot or get the cue to fall down. And it's like, I mean, classic Doctor Who is already, you know, like you're already correcting for it. And there you're just kind of like a little confused. Like, is there going to be a twist? Is something going to happen? It's like, no, it was just really, really, really sloppy.
It was. And the editing choices are weird, and just, yes, it's definitely partly the fault of the director walking off set. But to be fair to him, you know, he did do Doctor Who previously. It was done differently. You know, wanted to do. He was dealing with a prima donna. Give you an idea of what Baker and where he was at this point. He was, he and Lala Ward, because, you know, they were an item at this point, and she's in on it. They both suggested to the director that he do an ad lib where they find an apple in Eden and look at it and say something like, well, better not eat this. Remember what happened with the first apple in Eden, or something like that. Like, right, some clunker of an ad lib that Tom Baker just wants to throw in because he's the star. I mean, it's bad enough that he did that overdubbed line, which is sort of now infamous, a lot of fan circles, where he gets dragged off at the end by the mandrels. And what is it? It's like, my fingers, my arms, my legs.
Well, it's the my everything that really
my
gets
everything.
You. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I mean, Tom, come on. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You would say that you might think that a lot of these comedy elements come from Douglas Adams. But no, it was a lot of it was just unintentional. It was just the cheapness of the weird suits that the passengers are forced to wear with sunglasses. That was bizarre. But Adams was he was the driving force behind wanting to make like a serious, you know, something, let's tackle drugs, let's tackle an adult theme. He was totally into it when he heard about the idea from Bob Baker. And part of the reason that he quit was like, you know, I realized that like there's just no working against the system here. There's no money. And besides, he was becoming, you know, increasingly involved in Hitchhikers. That was coming along. So I got to say, two things I've not seen written about anywhere, because I am such a Douglas Adams fan. I can see two very big influences from Nightmare in Eden on Hitchhiker's Guide. Okay. One of them is the comedy cops. The two cops who I think in the TV version of Hitchhikers are wearing exactly the same like sparkly black outfits as these guys. Mm-hmm. And their whole catchphrase is, it isn't easy being a cop, which is sort of like almost a parody of these guys who are, you know, written to be like slightly human and slightly, you know, they're not doing things by the books and they're shooting criminals without trial, and like it just,
well,
you know,
so. I feel like their first scene, I like Fisk and Costa as characters, which mm-hmm. are the names of the cops that come in, mm-hmm. and I think their first scene sort of really underscores who they are and what point the script is making about them. There's these, and Tom Baker, the doctor, rather, says it later in the next scene or something, that they're just bureaucrats, which is dead on. That's exactly how they're portrayed, and they're just there to sort of come in and either get people to follow the rules or make up rules so that they're in charge, and they just want to sort of get their collar, in a sense. Like, right away, it's like, oh, the doctor has some traces of this. We don't know who these people are. They're obviously the bad guys, which happens a lot in Doctor Who, but it is like they clearly have a vested interest in this. And then there's even the bit later where Fisk is talking about how they're going to get promoted and they're working the system. You know, there's every character here is either cynical or the script is cynical about them. And I think there was even right. more to be made of that here if they had bothered, because there's no one's really that heroic other than, you know, our heroes, the Doctor, Romana, and K-9.
That's the thing. It's actually, you could do this. You could take this shot for shot and just make like a very, very dark and gritty version. But the fact that the costume department has dressed them up in like sparkly black cop outfits, like, what are you even doing here? Like, they're just ridiculous. I, you know, today, if you were remaking that and they were about to shoot the doctor for suspecting of being criminal, I would love to see a scene where they just tear off their little star cop badges, tear off the name. It's the one thing you never want to see a cop do, take off his badge. Yeah, something like that would be good. To close the loop on Douglas Adams, the other thing I noticed, the passengers. So we have the scene of the doctor chasing the guy who turns out to be the NARC agent, dressed as a passenger, through all these passenger compartments, gets stopped by a woman, gives her a jelly baby, and says, don't forget to brush your teeth. Remember, kids, this is definitely a very special episode. but that, to my mind, that really, really must have triggered Adams to think about the thing that happens in the second series of the Hitchhikers radio series, where they get on this starliner that's been docked. Ford and Zaphod get on a starliner that's been docked on the planet Brontotaur for thousands of years because it's awaiting delivery of lemon-soaked paper napkins. So there'll be a short delay. So the crew is all – the passengers are all in suspended animation waiting for the lemon-soaked paper napkins to arrive, and occasionally get woken up for tea and biscuits. And there's a mad rush, and they're chasing them through – through segment after segment of the ship. So that must have been on his mind around about the same time when he was writing the Hitchhikers radio series. So, yeah, this, I feel, influenced Douglas Adams more than Douglas Adams influenced this. And he clearly influenced this a lot. Like, there are a lot of funny lines that are very Adams.
Yeah, there's definitely some decent moments of comedy. One that I think is sort of people are split on is when Romana asks for a screwdriver. When they have to reassemble that thing in like 3 minutes. By the way, this is like loaded with technobabble. Like this, like my technobabble meter was going like off the charts.
Oh my God.
The various things they end up talking about.
They deserve Oscars for making it through those technobabble scenes. My goodness.
Yeah. There's a bunch of them. So it's like, here we go. There's the CET machine has a spatial integrator, a transmutation oscillator, a hologistic retention circuit, and a dimensional osmosis damper. Like you can see almost the sort of spin the wheel nature of this, right? Like, let's just put a bunch of words together, adjectives and nouns, and like, you know, that like someone must have done a Doctor Who Technobabble website. If they haven't, please do.
Yes, I think it was.
Comes out.
I think it was Toby Haddock who said that Bob Baker, and Dave Martin, like, they, so many of their scripts are people in spaceships aggressively pushing buttons at each other. Do you think it's just a great example of what's going on here? Like, there's so much talk around the buttons, and there's one point where it does work, and that's where the Doctor and Romana are trying to offhandedly tell Dr. Trist that he just doesn't have a clue what he's doing with this machine. Where, you know, they say, oh, have you thought of this? Have you got this? Have you installed this? Wait, you haven't done this? You haven't dampened your dimensions? like this thing is going to blow, you know. So it works there, but to also have it in every other scene where you're talking about the damn thing, yeah, it's techno babble too far.
Yeah. Let's get it. But on the lines that really work, though, I really love the bit where the doctor has tried to do some bad cover story about, like, I'm with the Galactic Insurance Corporation, and the captain's like, they went out of business 20 years ago. And he's like, oh, I was wondering why I hadn't been paid. You know, you see that sort of a, just appearing in a friend script or something, like,
that's
a pretty good line.
That's very Douglas Adams. And then the next, he keeps it going in the next line. The captain says something like, it's intolerable. And the doctor says, well, that's what I told them. It's like, he's just, he knows that he's not, he knows that the captain knows, but he's keeping it going. He's clinging to his cover story. I love it.
Yeah. He gets good mileage out of it. And you alluded to the other line later where the doctor is like, you know, he says, of course we should interfere. Always do what you're good at. Which is like, okay.
We're a long way away from never interfere unless there's a crying child. He's just interfering because it's fun, which is another word that he uses here to describe what he does.
Yeah, you can't quite put, you know, if you flip this with the scene in the Aztecs where he's telling Barbara not to change one damn thing. quite an evolution here with the show and the character, that's for sure.
How fallen, far you've fallen, Doctor. Yes, and of course, surely you shouldn't interfere in the Vraxoan trade, really. You shouldn't help them get. So you should allow Triss to just go on and as he would, and not clean up the drama. Let's talk about Triss, by the way.
Let's talk about Triss.
Because not only does he appear to have stolen Mr. Fibulee's glasses from the pirate planet.
Right.
But also, Lewis Fiander is the name of the actor. He's an Australian actor, which makes his comedy accent even more strange, which is just off the charts as comedy accent. It's sort of German, but it's sort of like someone who's never heard a German accent doing a German accent based on someone else's comedy German accent. And there's one point where he says to, like, where Romana's like talking about the machine in a lot of techno babble, and he looks at her and says, "You claim superior knowledge." I can't even say with a straight face, well, superior it's knowledge.
Future German. It's future German. It's hard to place.
Space German. Space German. Yes, absolutely.
Well, I gotta
say,
well, I don't mind why. I just like that it's memorable. I like Triss. I like the performance and the choice of the glasses. I also feel like he's so quirky and weird and seems to have a scientific mind. I think we're trained a little bit as Doctor Who viewers to sort of, if not trust him, kind of like him a bit. And the fact that there's this twist that he is the guy who, partnering with the other dude on the ship, who is the bad guy, who's smuggling the drugs and doesn't really care so much about the consequences of that. That's kind of good. And I also leads up to that. I think one of the best scenes is his pleading with the doctor, which I like also that acknowledging the doctor is sort of the authority figure here and the one to appeal to, like, hey, you understand I was just doing this to advance scientific knowledge, right? Like, and like I was, you get it, right? Like, and the doctor just doesn't even look at him, and is just something Comdicker would do to everyone. But he just says, go away.
And which is a nice line. And an example of Baker's ad libs can actually sometimes improve the show, because he was supposed to say something like, you know, shut up before you make me angry, which doesn't feel very doctorish, and go away does do that that's a lot better. But what else can we say about this thing? Let me talk briefly about my new segment that I'd like to call the Brit Boxer Rebellion, where I talk about the fact that I've not paid for a BritBox subscription for these many Classic Who stories.
You have to call it the streaming service that will not be named segment, because every time you say BritBox, someone thinks about, hey, should I subscribe to BritBox?
Hey, talk to us, BritBox, talk to us. Yeah, so I found this in the most surprising place, and that is the Internet Archive, which is previously I found Seeds of Death, the colorized version on Internet Archive. There's not only a regular version of this, but also the movie-length version of Nightmare of Eden is mm-hmm. also on Internet Archive, which is weird because you can't even get a torrent of it. Not that I would check such things. I'm a fine, upstanding citizen who doesn't torrent things, but... if I were, that's what I would have found. But it's right there on the Internet Archive, and you can download it. You can have Nightmare of Eden right now. Take it, you know, stick it on the screen. Have a Braxoen party with your best friends, and yeah, this would be the perfect background.
Wow, nice. So if you're ever questioning, could Nightmare of Eden get in a format where it might actually be worth watching again? That question's been answered, but we have some other questions we must answer, which of course are the four questions to Doomsday. First question: why did the randomizer take us here?
Why indeed? So I've got a very tenuous connection here, which is that we were last at the Three Doctors, which was around the 10th anniversary.
That was a trip.
That was a trip.
I was tripping
this is pretty trippy. Even more direct connection. It was at the 15th anniversary party in 1978 that Bob Baker first pitched the story that became Nightmare of Eden. So there is an anniversary connection because, Graham Williams was there. The producer was there at that party. Bob Baker's talking about this idea that he has. That's how it got started. So from the 10th to the 15th, and then I believe this was broadcast something closer to the 18th anniversary. It was late November in the year that it was shown, which is, I believe, 79. Is that correct? So yeah, 16th, that would be 16th birthday. So there's a lot of birthdayness, surprisingly, to Nightmare of Eden, as well as the random. Well, I just knew I'd be here, knew this is the perfect backdrop.
Very nice. Yeah, I basically have already kind of spoiled my connection, which is that I think the randomizer is taking us on a tour of Doctor Who adventures with infamous monsters. So we were there at the Three Doctors where those gel creatures were, shall we say, creative.
Yes.
But the kind of nothing burgers that sort of waddled along, and you kind of really had to fill in the blanks a bit on what they were and what they were doing to really get any sort of appreciation for whatever threat they posed. Whereas here, the mandrels even take it one more step down with their sort of mascot-esque shambling around the brightly lit decks of the cruise liner. So
you know what else? Sure. If we're being told that Omega was on Braxoen, that would explain a lot.
Well, I'm just, thank our lucky stars we've already done Androids of Tara. Otherwise the Tara Beast would probably have been next in our zone. But we'll see what the randomizer serves up next if it wants to go for a trifecta here.
Yes, indeed.
Maybe the wet planet?
Maybe. Maybe
like Zarbi? I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know. Well,
some people like the Zarbi.
One thing I will say about coming to Nightmare in Eden. Oh my goodness, it just completely fled from my head. So, but yeah, the connection from all of this stuff, the CGI edition in Day of the Daleks we've been to recently. Oh, yeah. Now also like it's showing us like the much improved special effects tour of Classic Who. So that's
yeah.
One
it's funny.
Thing.
Did you see the better effects with the ships?
I did. Yes, that's the version on the Internet Archive.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this is a thing. I'm glad you pointed that out because we didn't talk about it. And this was actually when they made it the first time they used video instead of film for those kind of spaceship effects. So normally they would do it on film. It would take a long time, but the results would look kind of okay. Here they did video. It didn't take as long. They only had it for like a few hours, or it only took them a few hours. But you know, the designer gave a long interview where he said, yeah, he thought the results were absolute crap. And I tend to have to agree with him. It's really unclear what happens with the two ships in the original version. And only through dialogue later do you realize, oh, this is interesting. There's like a weird hyperspace collision that happens. So they're not, the ships aren't broken. They're just kind of stuck together in a weird way with interfaces. Again, another great idea, just too bad it wasn't really executed all that well, certainly with the spaceship effects.
Indeed. I'm going to say one more possible reason why the randomizer took us here, by the way. The Doctor does use the TARDIS, does try to use the TARDIS to separate the ships, and does one of those moments where he pulls out a long thing on a wire, on a cable connected to the TARDIS. And K-9 says you only have 60% chance of success. And it doesn't work, but the randomizer does love those moments of like using the TARDIS during an adventure, which this just about has.
Alrighty, moving on to the second question, which is, what if the evil plot had succeeded? Okay, so I think we have to assume it is, well, obviously it's Trist, and who's the other guy again? Mm-hmm. The dude in the other ship who was working with him?
Oh, yeah, that guy. Diamonds, that's right. We were talking about Sapphire and Steel with
Trist and Diamond.
The Human Nature Project. Trist and Diamond. Yes, the Big Finish spinoff nobody asked for, Trist and Diamond. Yes.
They really look like a couple of, I don't know, what do they look like when they're kind of working together? Like, I feel like they're just tech bros who just got together and... You know, we've just IPO'd or something, and let's get out of here and go party.
Very apt comparison.
Come to think of it,
very apt comparison. Considering what Silicon Valley will do for funding, I wouldn't be surprised if they, like Trist, would fund a massive operation of drug smuggling.
So what happens in the story is through a bunch of technobabble, the Doctor somehow traps them by essentially dematerializing them and then materializing them out of hyperspace into the laser crystal machine. So they're trapped there, and then they can be arrested. So I guess for the evil plot to succeed, you have to assume that doesn't work and they just get away. That's a little
they
boring.
They just get away. Like, I mean, here's the thing that I'm glad you're sort of bringing up the cops and the bigger picture of what's happening here. Don't forget this. These ships are interlocked, floating above the planet Azure, which presumably has more than two cops. presumably, also, you would send more than the drug squad. And in fact, the interlocking of ships might be a bigger problem. And it's sort of weird, you know, if you imagine like there were two, you know, international space stations, and we looked up one day in the heavens and saw that they'd fused. I don't think your first call as president of the United States or, you know, world leaders would call the DEA. let's go raid that weird fused ship for drugs, because that's what we need up here. You'd think you might have a more vigorous reaction about the actual humanitarian catastrophe of these two ships.
Yeah, you got to send up the space firefighters with the space jaws of life. And
exactly. Or space Bruce things. Willis. Bruce Willis and Armageddon to go and blow the hole between the two ships or something.
Yeah.
So you got to figure that would be coming eventually. And maybe they don't get too far away.
Yeah, true. But they're in hyperspace, right? So presumably it's easier to sort of evade people when you're using that technology. I think to make it less boring, you might assume the mandrels are more successful at killing everybody, and they sort of run out. But I guess, I don't know what happens. They round them up. They want them rounded up because they want to take them with their machine back to wherever they're going to, they want the mandrels for the Vraxoan, right? I don't know. Like, maybe I'm not really fully up to speed on what happens here at the end, because they have the machine, the laser crystal thing, but they've taken it onto their machine and on their ship. What happened again? Refresh my memory.
Yeah, I'm not entirely clear myself. And I've not only watched that episode, but I listened as I was driving around Costa Rica to the novelization, the Terrence Dicks novelization, read by Dan Starkey. Not the thing I imagine I'd be listening to on holiday, but there you go. And it's not entirely clear what happens at the end there. It's all a bit confusing. One of their ships.
They have equipment on Diamond's ship, right? That is,
yeah.
That's how sort of they steal the contents of the laser crystal thing, I guess. And so The machine is still on the cruise liner, and the doctor gets Romana to fix it so that they can actually essentially beam everything back, including the ship itself. So I think that's kind of what happens. And it sort of almost works, you know, you kind of just go with it, but you're kind of a little bit like we are now, I guess. Happened. You're not quite with it.
I mean, here's the thing is, this is the tragedy of Nightmare of Eden. It's such a brilliant idea to do like drug smuggling within, you know, a planet on a crystal. Like that is, talk about being a mule. That is an extraordinary length to go to smuggle drugs, right? But also like you could believe it. That's what would happen in a galactic economy. You know, there are economic incentives for this kind of behavior. If you have some sort of holographic device, you know, just hide the drugs inside a world, inside a holographic device. It's brilliant, brilliant idea that is almost entirely overlooked here because there are too many ideas. It's so confusing as to exactly what's happening at any given moment.
Gotcha. Well, I guess, if the evil plot succeeds, we don't know. I think we're just going to go back to the original version. They get away.
They get away. Fraxo is spread far and wide, and Dr. Trist completes his research and gets a galactic Nobel.
Oh, my goodness. Well, and which galaxy? Not the question, but we need to answer at least a couple more questions. And the next one is, where is the Clara Splinter? Clara Oswald, of course, splintered in time at the end of the name of the Doctor. She is somewhere in every single Doctor Who story. Where is she in Nightmare of Eden?
Well, there are so many plot holes that Clara could clean up here. She could perhaps be a real Pied Piper instead of the Doctor's really bad dog whistle. Like, she could be broadcasting an actual tune that the mandrels respond to. Just like a random dog whistle that the Doctor has. I also think that maybe the Doctor hasn't really seen that many planets devastated by Fraxo, because you'd think we would have heard it before now. So I think Clara is actually a producer of an anti-drug segment of a PSA that the Doctor was watching on whatever hyperspace channel he's tuning into lately. Where it just like shows all the devastation of Rexoan communities, the Doctor's like, so he's prepared to know about this drug and how horrible it is and how he must stop it in its tracks.
I think she's doing that PSA you did at the beginning, but instead of cracking the egg, she throws it up and disintegrates it. Just like, any questions? And I could totally see her in her posh accent. Any questions? Here's the thing. I could be mean and say Clara in this timeline broke up with Stott before his expedition. And that's why he is so wooden and can only speak lines in a monotone and really has no emotional delivery whatsoever.
He puts his hands on his hips like this.
He's basically just an exposition machine. He's basically the most unmemorable guest star in Doctor Who history, potentially, or at least a contender. But I won't do that. I'm going to assume she's a passenger, and she's good at locking doors to keep the mandrels from killing too many people. So she's done her best to just sort of contain the mandrel threat to that one economy deck we have, but they weren't able to spread beyond that. So
maybe she is spraying all but one mandrel with this sort of antifungal spray that prevents them from turning into Vrax when they die.
That would be bad if there was just Vraxoan all over the ship. That would be
exactly.
Speaking of communities getting ruined by it. Okay, so a few possibilities there. And it's time now, folks. It's time to move on to the final question, the ultimate question, the only question that matters for Nightmare of Eden. What did we think of this story? The Pulte Open rating system has 6 ratings. There's the Dalek, which we give to a good episode of Doctor Who. The Ogron, which we give to a bad episode of Doctor Who. The Professor Hayter, which we give to a bad episode of Doctor Who, but hey, at least they tried something. The Viscount Banger, which we reserve for the best of the best. The Fixed Point in Time, where it is a story beyond rating, sometimes for reasons of nostalgia, but occasionally for other reasons. And the Lady Cassandra, which is a paper-thin plot story that looks good, especially with a little moisturizing. So what do we say about Nightmare of Eden?
All right. So part of me was tempted to go with A Fixed Point in Time because I remember a lot of season 17 from watching it. Like I said this before the show, season 18 was where I really started watching week to week. Ironically, as a lot of people stopped, season 18 had terrible ratings. Season 17, I remember quite a lot of, and I definitely remember the ship. I don't remember the mandrels, definitely don't remember being scared by them. I remember the ship, like the beautifully lit, kind of very beige 70s kind of lighting. Really, really kind of, I believed it as a kid. I had no idea what was going on, but it was fantastic. It was the Doctor running around the ship and it just, everything looked futuristic. So it's almost Fixed Point in Time. I don't think that it lodged in my heart enough, in my memory enough for that to happen. So I'm going to give it a hybrid, which is something we often do. We've had a lot of hybrids, and I think I've thought long and hard about this one, exactly what kind of hybrid it is. I think it is half Professor Hayter, because they tried something. Bob Baker was trying for, you know, like the heavy-hitting drugs narrative. And it's half Lady Cassandra, because it does just look so trippy. And kind of, it's got all those 70s colors everywhere. The sets may be cheap and cheerful, but they're good-looking. The jungle on Eden looks really amazing. And then you've got those trippy effects where the Doctor goes through the barrier and he's kind of juddering and these wonderful old-school film effects that really, really hold up. Like a lot, the model special effects don't. That's why they had to update them. But like the Doctor going between the ships, that really,
that
looks
was okay.
Good, right?
That would especially the cliffhanger to episode 3. Yeah, that wasn't too bad.
So when they jump into Eden, cliffhanger episode 2, that's wonderful. So I'm going to say hybrid Hayter and Cassandra.
Wow. Okay. Not bad. Not bad. I was very tempted to give this an Ogron. Was not really an enjoyable watch for me. My whole family sort of peaced out. And I don't blame them. And I didn't want to, color their impression of this era and Tom Baker with something they didn't enjoy.
Wise.
So, frankly, I was just kind of annoyed with a lot of the performances and stuff, like, especially like I mentioned Stott, but I do feel like, You definitely feel it, especially towards the end, that everyone just wants this to be over. And it's like, let's just get this freaking scene done and get it in the can. We really don't care what it is. So I think that's very much Ogron territory. But again, like, I do remember this episode as a kid. I do remember sort of the ideas here. I think the ideas are great. Like, I really wish they'd sort of done even more with the laser crystal thing. The hyperspace collision. I actually didn't mind, even though the effect doesn't work and that it suffers, the script suffers because of it. I didn't mind that it had to be explained because the explanation was so cool. It sort of made me stand up and pay attention. So I'm not going to do a hybrid. I'm just going to say you narrowly escaped the Ogron and you're a Professor Hayter, Nightmare of Eden. That's what you are. You did try something. As bad as the execution was, I would not mind revisiting this material with perhaps more modern sensibilities of what the war on drugs has done and trying again, maybe not with Rex Owen, but with some other storyline. Let's do that sort of
bring
a traffic for Doctor Who. That'd be okay.
Yeah, bring back Zip. Justice for Zip. let's definitely do a modern version of this, RTD, if you're listening. Definitely some great ideas to pick out here, as Douglas Adams already did. So, yeah, that's it. It's a three-quarters hater. One-quarter Cassandra. Sure. I think we nailed it. I think that is the perfect judgment on Nightmare of Eden. And I'm so glad, Pete, that the nightmare is over. We've woken up.
It's not for you, though, listener. Don't forget, go right to Spotify right now if you're listening on that app. Or if you're not, create a burner account and go to Spotify so you can vote in our poll. In poll to open for Nightmare of Eden. Is it a Dalek in your book? Is it a Professor Hater? Is it an Ogron? We want to know. And so do future listeners of this podcast when we will talk about those results. So please go ahead, vote now, vote often. And in the meantime, Chris and I will separate our ship from Nightmare of Eden and see we can shoot off into hyperspace next when we activate the randomizer.
Yes, little does Pete know, I've got my pockets full of Rexoin. I've got a mandrel on my back, and we're escaping with it. But yes, we use the randomizer. We use two components. Pete has a codex. That's a list of all Doctor Who stories in sequential order. I have the executor made by random.org, which uses true random number generators. Atoms bouncing around the atmosphere. Bits of Rexoin in the atmosphere of Eden. Whatever it is on your home planet, that's what it's looking for. Just randomly generated interaction of particles, because computer generated randomness is rubbish. Even inside space crystals, they just can't do it. So Pete, how many stories, given that we should probably technically add the Star Beast to our list,
I'm
just realizing.
Yep. So taking into account that by the time people hear this, Star Beast will be officially part of the Codex. We now have 199.
Woohoo!
Again.
Again. That's
so,
right.
Because last time it was 199. But now, Star Beast has kept us at that level.
We are holding steady. If we get another 199, I don't know what that means. I guess we have to record our brief hit, and then we also have to record in our future. The next edition will be the Star Beast, but there's only a 1 in 199 chance of that happening, so what are the odds? 1 in 199. But we do like to issue challenges to the randomizer. Pete, what you got this week?
Good monsters. We had some bad monsters. We had a string of bad monsters, although they were nicely upgraded in Day of the Daleks. But I would even argue, Family of Blood, even though dramatically they were off the charts visually, and I said this at the time, it was kind of interesting that they were these green globes, but they're not monstery, if you know what I mean. Definitely sinister, definitely menacing, but not quite monstery. So let's have some sort of interesting monsters. Let's do it. Doesn't have to be Prometheus level, but let's have something cool.
All right, good monsters. All right, well, I'm going to continue on the addiction theme, and I'm going to broaden it as widely as possible, because obviously a lot of people are addicted to things other than substances. People are addicted to television, or they are addicted to food, which I guess is kind of substance, or whatever it is. Everyone's kind of addicted, a little bit addicted to something, even if it's just coffee. Show us an episode of Doctor Who that contains an addiction.
All right. Well, maybe we'll see something with an addiction to monsters, which is something that fits a lot of Doctor Who fans. But
could we get Love and Monsters?
Oh, there it is. There it is. But now that we called it, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Have you plugged the numbers in? Are you ready?
That's right. Give me the countdown.
Here we go. In 4, 3, 2, 1.
Got a cover letter.
Dimensional Oscillator says 112.
Oh, you betcha. You bet we are in New Who. Oh, it is time for the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit.
Oh my God, the randomizer did it again.
Another tenant two-parter.
But it keeps listening to the beginning of the podcast, to something that one of us mentions at the beginning of the podcast. You remember, you mentioned Nightmare of Eden, because we were talking about Bob Baker and Dave Martin stories. You mentioned that was his solo story at the beginning of Three Doctors when the randomizer chose Nightmare of Eden. So you had mentioned it in the show. Impossible Pit, Satan Planet was my first guess on the Humoji Challenge. So,
It was. Okay, there it is. I think that I love how you reversed the nouns, by the way. The Impossible Pit.
Impossible Pit and the Satan Planet, yes. I'm going to see if I can keep that going throughout our entire commentary on it.
Unless I'm in a parallel universe. Oh, guys, this is going to be a great one. Impossible Planet, Satan Pit. It's definitely up there. Well regarded. Definitely, I got to say, interesting monsters. Not bad, randomizer.
Talk about an interesting monster, yes. And Are there addictions? I don't know. We'll have to see. Addiction to translating very old languages.
We'll definitely have to see, guys. And we will be doing it with a guest next time. So if you follow us on TikTok or if you follow Doctor Who on TikTok, we've got a special treat for y'all. So come on back next time when there will be three of us discussing the Impossible Planet and the Satan Pit on this podcast, Pull to Open, which is a podcast. Yes, you follow podcasts, you subscribe to podcasts, you share them with friends, and also you review them in the Apple Podcasts app. Those are things you do with podcasts. Do all those. 5-star reviews are awesome. You will become an instant friend of the show. But if you want to do even more, go ahead and follow us on our website, pulltoopen.net, or become a patron at patreon.com/pulltoopen. Follow us on the socials. We're either at pulltoopen63 or pulltoopen. Keep trying. You'll find us there on one of those handles. Thanks always to Martin West for our rockin' music. And we will see you impossibly next time.
That's right. We'll see you and the Ood and the Doctor on Crop Tour. See you guys.
Get spiritual with it. Bye-bye.